It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Proudly, Saturday Suckage, earning the admiration of Bob Costas for the confidence to call this little piece of radio earth Saturday Suckage.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
Simple. I suck so you don't have to. So I've, you know, in a sense, I've helped make Bob Costas great. Well, all right, well, yeah, it's Saturday Suckage, as you can tell. So Espo, who you hear in the Saturday Suckage, in somewhere in the beginning, Bob Costas will be back there. And Mike Esposito, who had been part of Saturday Suckage, he's not on Saturday Suckage now, but he still listens to Saturday Suckage, said that was great. His line about Saturday Suckage has to be the new show intro. Now go back to sucking. And underscoring the point, we have a lot of making up to do. So in our efforts to suck, we're going to go back to the guest hotline, not with a guest. Let me clear that up. Guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. He is Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. But what's going to suck is the topic, which is the Bulls, because that's what happens around here. Ricky, thanks for joining me again. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I decided that SB Nation stands for Sorry Bulls Nation. And maybe you can help. I don't know if AK is inert or inept. And maybe there's some of both in there, but for the third straight trade deadline, there's just a whole lot of hemming and hawing and humming and no, really no, what could a Bulls fan grab onto and say, yeah, this? Help me out here, Ricky.
Yeah, I think you're a little nicer than I am because I've been saying Arturas is either delusional or stupid. He seems to set insane parameters by which he deems himself a success, despite the fact that, you know, in a league where you either need to sell wins or sell hope, Arturas is not able to sell either of those things. So the Bulls at the trade deadline right now, 26 and 29 overall. The biggest issue in the organization right now, I would say, is their very meager goals. Arturas believes that making the playoffs is a gigantic accomplishment in a league where 16 of the 30 teams make the playoffs every single season. To most reasonable fans, contention means contending for a championship or at least making progress towards that. For Arturas, it's being the worst team to make the playoffs, to get a couple extra games of home revenue from the play-in tournament, from, you know, a first-round series. And it's put the Bulls in a position where they are not building anything in the future. Their outlook in the present is still, pretty uninspiring. And Bulls fans have to look at the situation right now and think at 26 and 29, this might be as good as it gets for the next few years because it's an asset poor team with an older roster that is down on future draft assets to build this team. And you just have to wonder, you know, what can fans really latch onto in terms of hope? And as long as Arturas is steering the ship, I don't think there is going to be much hope for the Bulls.
My positive thinking guest is Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. So I can't dispute any of that. I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to pull the roll, dolly the camera back. And when he was hired, he came from Denver and they seemed to be a smart team. He was regarded as smart. He was regarded as someone with good basketball insight, good basketball instincts, and then whatever the Nuggets were building to paid off last year, and they won the title. And you could argue, or you could make this snarky remark, and I have, that, well, they didn't win until he left, and that's what propelled them to that. But if he came here with that label, with that regard, with that reputation, did he become stupid here, or is ownership weighing on him to not risk turnstile dollars, which are far more important in the NBA than I ever believed, but apparently now they out-turnstile the NHL in terms of needs and in terms of percentages. Do you think he became dumb here, or he is working under something, under some pressure by ownership that you just that he can't say anything about because he can't throw random Reinsdorfs under the bus?
It certainly seems like Arturas is the ideal executive for the Reinsdorfs. He's going to try to win, but only within the, you know, the boundaries that the Reinsdorfs set, and that's that they're not going to go into the luxury tax. They want to make the playoffs every year, and they want to keep the building full. So in that regard, Arturas has been viewed as a success to his bosses most likely, but I credit the Bulls beat reporters at the post-deadline press conference for really pressing him on this, asking, you know, Arturas, do you believe you have the autonomy to do a rebuild if you want to do that? And he said, yes, you know, ownership has given me the ability to do whatever I want. And I believe, you know, we're in the mix for contention. So don't call me a failure yet. We'll see if we make the playoffs. The fact of the matter is Arturas Karnišovas is a failure, whether the Bulls make the playoffs or not. If they don't make the playoffs, he should very obviously be fired and the Bulls should just hire someone else and get on with the rest of the franchise. Even if they do make the playoffs, I would argue he should still be fired because both their present outlook and their future outlook is pretty bleak. So Arturas is right now defining the terms of his own success. This does not make any sense to anyone else who is viewing him objectively, but it apparently makes a lot of sense to him because he seems very pleased with where the franchise is. I think the Reinsdorfs in general typically have a very, very, very long leash with their executives. They do not like to fire their executives. The best thing about Arturas Karnišovas, I can say, is that as a player, he was never good enough to hit a game-winning shot in the 1993 NBA Finals like John Paxson. So perhaps the Reinsdorfs will not give him the same leash they gave Paxson for 20 years. But, you know, for all of the reason there was at the time to fire Paxson, and there were many reasons. The hiring of Jim Boylan, an absolute disaster. Trading Jimmy Butler was very short-sighted and a poor decision at the time. You know, at this point, I think Bulls fans need to look at the previous regime that were so loathed in the city and think they were a lot better than this guy. So Arturas at the moment just doesn't seem to have, you know, much of a set plan to get the Bulls into a better situation. And I think this is just sort of what it's going to be moving forward as long as he's in charge.
My guest is Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. We're talking Bulls basketball here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum with you. Be here till 2 o'clock with Saturday Suckage. So the options, the moves, the whatever they could do, could have done, whatever they still might do, what they're into Zach LaVine for so much money and he's hurt and that killed whatever hopes somebody had at the trade deadline. But isn't trading that guy for that much who you signed for so much money, isn't that an indictment of your basketball IQ and your ability to evaluate players?
I mean, there are so many indictments of Arturas' ability to be successful at his job. You can start with the fact that Lauri Markkanen has become a top 20 player in the entire NBA for the Utah Jazz this year. The Bulls got a lottery-protected first-round pick and Derek Jones Jr., in return for Markkanen. So that trade is just an absolute disaster. The trade to acquire Nikola Vucevic, also clearly a disaster. Re-signing Nikola Vucevic to a three-year, $60 million deal, also a disaster. I thought signing Zach LaVine at the time was a reasonable decision for the franchise. Unfortunately for the Bulls, the rules changed a year after they signed him to that contract. In the new CBA, it became much more punitive to have really high overall payrolls for a team. So I think that was something the Bulls couldn't really foresee. I think Zach was honestly living up to his contract as recently as last year. He was really good to close last season, the final 60 games of the year. I believe he averaged 26 points a game on 62% true shooting. Very few players in the NBA could score that many points with that much efficiency. But of course, this year it all fell apart. And I think that's a byproduct of Arturas putting his name in trade rumors and not being able to actually pull the trigger on that. I think it's a byproduct of Arturas not knowing when to sell an asset at the high point of that asset with LaVine. There was a time when he probably could have gotten a large packet of assets back for him. And at this point, it seems like, you know, the Bulls either can't get rid of him at all or are going to have to attach additional assets to get rid of him. So that is a you know, tough situation for the franchise. And then you look at it and, you know, Arturas thinks it's suitable to build around 35-year-old DeMar DeRozan. So he's a free agent after the year. I think that he has a lot of leverage on the Bulls right now because Arturas does not want to tank down in the standings to try to get a higher draft pick next year. Of course, they still owe the 2025 first-round draft pick to the San Antonio Spurs, top 10 protected, for the right to acquire DeRozan, despite the fact that he was a free agent when they made that deal. So I think there's a lot of strikes against Arturis right now. I'll certainly give him credit for hanging on to Coby White, who's developed into a really nice piece for the Bulls' present and their future. Ayo Dosunmu looks really good after working with recently hired shooting coach Peter Patton. I think that, you know, that was a nice decision by Arturis. But if you take all of his decisions in sum, he's put the Bulls in a much worse position than they were when he inherited the team. So as long as Arturis still is able to look at where he has the Bulls right now and deem them a success in his eyes, the only person that's going to be able to change that is Michael Reinsdorf by firing him. And, you know, from what I've seen out of the Reinsdorfs, rooting for two of their teams for all of my life, I just don't really see that being a realistic scenario.
How sad, Ricky. How sad.
Save us, Caleb Williams. We need you.
Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation. So I'll ask you one last question, and it is, we have found in our recent discussion, you and me today, zero reason to recommend him to rebuild, retool, re-anything on this team, and yet he put together a team that was number one in the East. He had to cheat to do it, and the Bulls got punished because of what he did to get Lonzo Ball. But it turned out that Lonzo Ball was Michael Jordan. Without him, the Bulls are a miserable team to watch. So he put together that team. The pieces were all good. The record was excellent. There was hope. There was a variety of basketball that was pleasant to watch and exciting. So can that guy do it again would be the question. Can you look at that and fairly assess him?
I certainly think it's possible. He did build a pretty good team when everyone was healthy. Really, the issue with Arturis is that he wasn't able to pivot at the right time. Like, it was pretty clear that Lonzo Ball's knee injury was going to be something that was going to keep him out either for multiple seasons or for forever. And at that point, you know, you probably should have realized this guy was the skeleton key of the team. They had an opportunity to sell high on DeMar DeRozan at last year's trade deadline. They didn't do it. They had an opportunity to sell high on Alex Caruso and Andre Drummond at this year's trade deadline. They didn't do it. So can Arturis build the team back up to competence? I wouldn't say there's a 0% chance, but I certainly don't have much confidence in him. I mean, for one, they're not going to have their first round pick next year. For two, you know, Arturis is really, really bad in the draft. Dalen Terry doesn't look like a good first round pick. Patrick Williams at number 5 overall, doesn't look like a promising pick. I like Pat as a player. I think that he has a skill set that can contribute to winning basketball, but for a top 5 pick, you need to average more than 10 points a game. I'm sorry, man. And they're going to have to decide how much he's worth now, where I don't expect him to play the rest of the season. We'll see, but he has a very strange bone injury in his foot that seems to be a Bulls specialty. All of their players developing these very strange injuries they can't come back from. Javonte Green would be another example of that from last year's team, who still hasn't played in an NBA game since. So I do think it's possible the Bulls could build back a competitive team. It's very tough when Lonzo's making $20 million a year and can't play. It makes it even tougher when Zach's making over $40 million a year and isn't playing this season. But it's going to take the type of creativity and foresight we have not seen from Arturis to this point in his tenure. So I think it's going to be an uphill battle. I think the president of the team, you know, it's possible they can make the playoffs this year, give the fan base some exciting games to watch in the play-in tournament. But unfortunately, Arturis has put the fan base in a spot where it's like, should we even root for them to make the playoffs? Because really, this guy should be shamed for his poor decisions at the trade deadline. His job security should be in major jeopardy. It's just a tough position for the fan base. And I think right now, it's possible they can make the playoffs, but I don't see a lot of hope for the present or the future.
Well, maybe he can rebuild the Bulls the way he rebuilt the Orlando Magic. See?
There you go.
See how that works? Yeah. Okay, well, maybe not. Ricky, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation, talking Bulls basketball here on The Score. It's All-Star Weekend. The Bulls will have nobody doing nothing the All-Star Weekend for the first time since 1980. And, oh, would you look at that, Michael Jordan's birthday. Happy All-Star Weekend, Bulls fans, Bulls executives, Bulls, yeah, okay. We'll take a break, and when we come back, talk some football. Because you know what? You know what happened? As soon as the Super Bowl ended, you know what happened? Robbie, do you know what happened?
Wait a minute. Are the Bears on the clock?
The Bears are on the clock. Nice. They are so on the clock that the score has Mark Grody for the second year in a row doing the show on the clock. It's every Friday evening. I believe it's 6 p.m. Central Time. And that's how on the clock the Bears are. If this becomes a regular thing, I think Ryan Poles will be fired. You can't keep, unless you keep trading for some other bad team's first round pick, but you really got to get good yourself at some point. Maybe we'll see if the Super Bowl told us anything. I'll talk to Hub Arkish. Did we learn anything from the Super Bowl? Can we compare anything? Did we gain some insight by the Bears cutting two long tenured players, which they did this week? So we'll ask Hub that. It's Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Indeed, Saturday Suckage, confidently, proudly. We have something new for the roll call next week. Yay! And it's a Hall of Famer. Welcome in, welcome back. This broadcasting note, the Parkins and Spiegel Show is hosting a QB1 town hall this Wednesday from 2 to 6 p.m. in front of a live studio audience at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. They'll also be joined by football experts to weigh in on the QB1 debate that everyone is talking about. That's the QB1 Town Hall with Parkins and Spiegel this Wednesday from 2 to 6 p.m. Listen live right here on 670 The Score or the Odyssey app. You can watch live on Twitch and YouTube. And as long as there's a QB1 debate, that means the Bears are on the clock. And Hub is on the phone, the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Hub, thanks for joining me again. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing great. I have a question for you. The Super Bowl last week, I always look at it through, it's undeniable, unavoidable, the prism of the Bears. Did we as Bears observers, should we as Bears observers learn anything? Did something come out? Did we watch these teams, particular players, and say, we all know we want that, what we want, but did you see it? Look through the prism of the Bears at the Super Bowl, and what did you come away with?
Well, I mean, not a whole lot, because the Bears are so different from those two teams. They were the two best teams in the NFL. I think the 49ers, the most talented team in the NFL, the Chiefs certainly close. I guess, if anything jumped out at me, it's that you can find a Super Bowl or maybe even franchise quarterback with the last pick in the seventh round. You know, because Brock Purdy was not the reason that they didn't win that football game. You know, Patrick Mahomes was the reason that the Chiefs won that football game. And he was, what, the 10th pick in the first round, I think. But, no, as far as, you know, watching the game, those are two great teams. I thought it was a really good game. I don't know if you'd agree. I really enjoyed it. The second half more than the first half. But for the most part, relative to the Bears, you know, other than, you know, looking now at free agency and knowing that the 49ers in particular have a number of free agencies on both lines, free agents, I should say, on both lines, you know, maybe you could look at some of that. But I think most of what Bears fans should have learned is that's what they hope that their team looks like in another year or two.
I look at it, Hub, and I say, well, you saw two different ways to build this team, maybe the last pick or a quarterback you would least suspect of being that kind of guy versus a first round pick of somebody that ran screaming, you know, forced a coach or a talent evaluator to run bouncing down the hall. This is the guy, this is the guy, this is the guy. And it seems to me that if you got that guy, you always got a chance. He can deodorize everything. If you don't have that guy, too many other things have to come together, which is why you start with that guy. And the Bears have to take every opportunity to draft that guy. I mean, the team president says, dream big, swing big. And I think that's the way to go. How are your thoughts on that and in view of what Mahomes winning the game did and what it did with Mahomes winning the game the way he did?
Well, you know, there's really two separate subjects here, Steve. There's no question that the most important guy on your team is that guy, the quarterback, if he's the right guy. You know, you can't doubt that. And the Bears haven't had it for, you know, 45 years. That's why they've won one Super Bowl in all those years. And that's what they have to do is find that guy. But first, you know, not first, but next, what you have to realize is that, but you don't find that guy with the number one pick in the draft, you know. And so you still have the same debate, the same conversation. And now the issue is, of the five or six quarterbacks who are going to be drafted in the first round, is Caleb Williams that guy? Because he is going to be the number one overall pick. The consensus seems to be that he's the best prospect. But, you know, history will tell us that you're going to fail 80-90% of the time if you think you're finding that guy on the number one pick. And so, you know, that's why, you know, Ryan Poles, I think, has said and continues to say, got to continue to do our homework. Don't even go to the combine for another 10 days or 9 days, whatever it is. That's where they're going to get their first in-person looks at, you know, all of these guys in the draft. I'm sure they're a little more focused on free agency right now to try and, you know, make some final decisions on what they want to do there before they go to the combine. You know, like you said, you got to have the quarterback. If you want to be a contender every year, you got to find the quarterback. The thing that's a lot trickier is figuring out how you find that quarterback.
Well, they're supposed to know that. That's their job. Everybody in every organization, that's their job, and nobody can do it with any consistency except for maybe Andy Reid. It's a remarkable thing, is it was something that important. Is how do you justify this? That's the wrong word, but how do you understand that? It's so important, and nobody can do it regularly.
Well, you know, Steve, we've been doing this a long time. I've been doing it 45 years. And, you know, this year I will miss on players, I'm sure, and also find some that nobody else is talking about who turn out to be good. That's the way it works. You know, why some guys are better than others is because they're great coaches or great GMs, great talent evaluators. They know what they're looking for. I think the one thing that has to be accepted, and I think that Ryan Poles knows this. I think what Bears fans have to feel good about is, remember, Ryan Poles was there when they drafted Patrick Mahomes. I mean, you know, he knows how to do this, and or at least saw how to do this. So, you got to feel good about that. But at the end of the day, I am completely convinced that the mental aspect of it, the attitude, the intelligence, the ability to understand football, not just being a smart guy, you know, not, you know, winning tests on things that don't matter, but knowing what you're looking for mentally, what that guy can do to be who Patrick Mahomes is, to make the plays at the key time when they do, and to see them when a lot of other people aren't seeing them. Those guys are so rare. You know, is there any other dominant franchise quarterback in the league right now than Patrick Mahomes. You know, there's three or four more pretty good ones, but they're not Mahomes. And you know, before Mahomes, the comparisons people are making is Tom Brady. So you got to go back, 25 years to finding that guy. They're just really hard to find. I feel good about what we've seen from Ryan Poles so far in his ability to understand that and to identify that. But, you know, now he's got the work to do over the next couple months.
My guest is Hub Arkush, senior NFL analyst for The Score. We're talking Bears and quarterbacks. The Bears are on the clock. In case you hadn't heard, the Bears are on the clock. Two moves they made yesterday, or at the end of this week, was not bringing back Cody Whitehair, not bringing back Eddie Jackson. So those guys in particular leaving, what does that mean? And the prospects or the importance of how the Bears go about filling them. Where do you rank them, and who are likely replacements?
Well, I think the major concern and the focus has to be is that both guys are such key leaders in the locker room and with their teammates and you know, good football players. You know, Jackson probably a little more than Whitehair, or at least for that one season in 2018. But, you know, the way they have played, it's really more the way Whitehair has played. With Jackson, it's more the injuries and the way he's played. They're not the players anymore that they were in 2018. And there is, I think it's about $22 million more in cap savings by releasing them. We knew it was coming. You know, just because you release them doesn't mean you can't re-sign them. And so if they think with Jackson in particular, you know, that there's not a big market out there, that I don't think it's going to be a huge market. There will be a market. But it's a possibility, you know, that he could still be back. It's unlikely, I think, at this point, because guys, once they get cut, probably feel bad and aren't happy and maybe want a new start. But they are big losses to the Bears, more in the leadership and the building of the roster than they are in terms of being a better football team on the field this season.
Does the money that it adds to the cap space tell you anything about which way they might go in the draft, or what they might decisions they might make at quarterback?
Well, you know, Steve, I was thinking about this a little while ago. It actually does give you more room if you want to try and find the quarterback in free agency versus the draft. You know, if you want to spend $225 million on a quarterback, and there's a couple out there. I don't know if there are or not. I mean, Kirk Cousins is the guy who I think is going to get the most money. You know, it could be an option, but from everything we have already learned about Ryan Poles, I don't think that's what he's thinking. I think he's going to draft his guy. But you know, which guy that is and where they pick him and what pick they need to take him. That's the part that we're all going to have fun talking about for the next month and a half, but we're going to have to wait until if they make a trade. I can't remember exactly when he made the trade last year, but it was a good, I think almost a month before the draft. So, you know, we're going to find out something after the combine. But at the end of the day, I don't think Poles is going for a veteran. I think he's going to try and draft that quarterback.
And there are always guys that shoot up and down, and stocks rising, stocks falling. I mean, fans should get used to that if you're not already used to that, and it go into the combine and this guy's not so good. And then, say, you come out of it, and 2 weeks later, he's soaring up the draft boards. And usually based on nothing but stuff people have reason to just make up rumors, or just you're doing an agent a favor and it's just idle talk. I don't know what you can expect. Can you expect more? If you're a fan, should you gird yourself for more this year because of the quarterbacks, because of the number of quarterbacks?
Well, I think you have to. People have been talking about this quarterback draft for 2 years already, and now it's happening. And now there are six of them that are in the draft that have applied, who I think all could be justified in the first round. That would be pretty unusual, that many quarterbacks in the first round. But the top two with most analysts have never really changed. It's Caleb Williams and Drake May. And there are some who do like May more than Williams, but the majority think that it's Williams. The issues that I have as I study this stuff is I picked six of his games to watch, and I didn't pick special games or his best games or his worst games, just six games to get, you know, different looks at him. And in those six games, I haven't seen the number one pick in the draft. You know, now I know that a lot of people who know more about it than me have, and I would trust them more than I would trust me. But, you know, this is my job, and looking at it is what I do. And I'm a little worried that Williams isn't bigger. You know, he's not as small as last year's number one, but he's not much bigger. That's a minor concern. But the major concern is that he didn't show up at his best in his biggest games, you know, and that's where I come back to the mental aspect of it and how you handle it and understanding it that does concern me a little bit. All that said, if they take Williams at number one, I'm not going to be negative about it anyway. I'll be negative because I think it would be a mistake not to trade the pick for all the extra picks he could get. But if they keep it and they use it on him, I don't have a problem with that. The majority of the experts say this is the number one quarterback and the Bears do need a number one quarterback. I just think it's so risky when you're giving up the ability to draft so much more talent and you have so much work left to do to build a Super Bowl team, that's kind of my focus on this thing. It's not about Caleb Williams. Williams has eliminated this stuff about I don't want to be a Bear. You know, I don't know where that came from, probably his agent, but at the end of the day, he's worked pretty hard to say, no, I'd be happy to be a Bear in the last couple of weeks, probably because he knows they have the number one pick right now. But still, the fact that he's done that, he's been clear on it. He said, I have no problem being the Bear. I think all that goes away, and now they just have to decide if he is the next Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, before I let you go, there is the Pro Football Weekly podcast. So you can find it on Patreon, dear football listeners. And it's Wani and Dan Hampton, right?
Yes. And these are two of my best friends in the business after all these years. And it's partially to tell everybody about football, and it's partially just to have fun.
And so have you talked draft story with Mr. Hampton?
No, that's a great idea for this week's podcast. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember him being drafted in the first round and what a great college football player he was, but I haven't talked to him about it. And that would be a good, actually for Wani too, who's drafted a bunch of guys. So I think that'll be the focus for next week's or this coming week's podcast.
I think it's a good way to go. And as a heads up to fans, Dan Hampton was drafted in an era of rotary phones. I just need you to understand that, and then everything else makes sense. Hub, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Always enjoy it, Steve. Talk to you later.
Hub Arkush, Scores NFL analyst, senior NFL analyst, and the Pro Football Weekly podcast. And you can find that on Patreon, and Dave Wanstead and Dan Hampton. And get Hamp to tell his draft story, and that will be a worthwhile listen. Going to take a break and some Super Bowl stuff that I wanted to share and get Robbie's thoughts on. Robbie Triano, the suckage producer du jour. And we're working very hard to reduce ourselves to normal amount of suckage after sort of spiking with Bob Costas on this show. And Bob Costas joined the suckage roll call, and you should know. So that'll give you reason to tune in next week. We call that the long tease in the business. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage. I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage. Confidently say that, Bob Costas. Robbie Triano, our producer here. Do you like Usher? Do you know who Usher is? Did you halftime show?
Oh my god!
What do you mean? Oh my god!
It was that was like my middle school was Usher. Yeah, that was like my middle school like time and all of that era. So like all my friends that I watched it with, that's what we grew up with. So it was we were all very involved in that halftime.
Yeah. So. Do you think you're the what generation are you, Robbie?
I'm like on the fringe of millennial and Gen Z. So I'm like a year into millennial.
Okay. See, that's the problem right there. The Usher show was not aimed at you. It was aimed at whatever generation came before you. Huh? I mean, don't give me this cusp stuff. We're not doing astrology here.
I'm a Sagittarius.
And it's like, I don't know, what's it called? Generation OMG? Is that what it is? Or
LOL, yeah.
Generation Upspeak? we talk like that? So I found the secret to, I found what I want to do with this. I don't need letters. I don't need, here's what I want. And this came from Sarah, a mate at my Trader Joe's, my bunkie. And she's the kind of Packers fan who always takes off Super Bowl Sunday. So if it's any consolation to Bears fans all these years, over the last three decades, there is a joyous hell you can envision Packer fans that they will endure while Bears fans know they'll always have Super Bowl Sunday free. You're guaranteed that. Much like the Sox and October free. You'll have, that'll be the case. The Bears fans will always have Super Bowl Sunday free if you want to make plans. Anyways, one of my bunkies, she described the target, the Usher show that was the target was her generation. And her description was, we're at the age where the players look cute, but so do the coaches. That's the label. I think that's so much better than labeling generations with letters and whatever. That's a better way to do it. It's much more descriptive. We're at the age where players look cute, but so do the coaches. So much better. She's, my bunkie, Sarah, is also a Packers fan who wears a sweatshirt with Matt LaFleur on it, and it says, my coach is hotter than yours.
Not wrong.
She admitted she never had such a shirt when Holmgren and McCarthy were there. Okay, also in the Super Bowl stuff, this is an amazing thing. Absolutely amazing. This is legendary stuff. Chiefs guard and former Illinois lineman Nick Allegretti, he started Super Bowl 58 in place of Joe Thuney. He played in all 79 snaps, did Nick Allegretti, despite suffering a torn UCL in his elbow in the second quarter. An MRI this week revealed the full tear. Where's the All-Madden team when you need it? Do you know what that is? Do you know what the All-Madden team is?
I'm guessing that's the choices of that Madden picked of like the gamers. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, it's the all iron team kind of thing. It's Madden team, all Madden, the toughest guys. It was like Olin Krutz. Olin Krutz was all Madden, all time all Madden guy. Nick Allegretti. We need an all Madden team.
How can you even block with a tear in your arm? I feel like your arms are so important. How could you do that?
Well, it probably kept you from holding. And by the way, I don't believe if for you conspirophiles, you NFL conspirophiles, you Taylor Swift conspirophiles, you Swifties, you Chiefties, you got the number. There were zero holding calls against the Chiefs offensive line by an offensive line that like led the league or came close in holding calls this year. And remarkably, in a Super Bowl attended by Taylor Swift, raising the consciousness of the NFL and raising the platform and the value. And you got that shot of Taylor and the boyfriend kissing on the field. So you conspirophiles. And I would say Bosa was foremost among them because he voiced it early in the week and it did no good. They were going to run that gambit on you. They were going to make sure the Chiefs didn't get called for holding, and Patrick Mahomes did it. Trying to explain John Madden, and you didn't know what it was. The All Madden team was a big part of what we did when we were watching TV, and John Madden was on and watching NFL football. The All Madden team. This is like trying to explain to somebody that Paul McCartney was in a band before Wings. It just is so.
See, it's funny because when you said all Madden, the thought in my head came to the difficulty when you play the video game Madden. The hardest level when you play the video game is called all Madden. So I thought like, oh, the players who play in the hardest mode. So that's where I'm at.
Okay.
You probably didn't understand a word of that.
No, I'm fine with it. I understand that. But all Madden to people in my generation is, these were the toughest guys in football. Nick Allegretti would have been all Madden. So Travis Kelce is going all Michael Jordan. That's, look, he's in his Taylor Swift era. You do it. You do you. On Kelce's New Heights podcast, which was released following his team's Super Bowl win over the 49ers, the athlete revealed that there is one thing that could get him to call it quits in the NFL sooner than expected. This is after he shoved and yelled at Andy Reid. Quote, I love Coach Reid. Coach Reid knows how much I love to play for him, how much I love to be a product of his coaching career. I'm not playing for anyone else but Big Red. If he calls it quits this year, I'm out of there with him, man. I've got a certain relationship with him. Andy Reid, in Travis Kelce's world, has reached Phil Jackson status. He's gone all Jordan on him. Like, right, you know what? And Big Red ain't coaching. I ain't going to be there. Whoa! And here you go. Here, this item. Former Bears head coach Mark Trestman was hired by the Chargers as a senior offensive assistant. You might remember the name of the Chargers coach, Jim Harbaugh. So I'll just throw this out there that the way he thinks, maybe Harbaugh and the Bears were not such a good thing after all. And maybe you don't want to go the Mark Trestman route. And now Trestman, Luke Getsy's in Vegas, Matt Nagy in KC. So you got three ex-Bears coaches or of some form in the same division. It's easy to laugh at, but Nagy's got his second ring as offensive coordinator. And it's more likely the Chargers will do something before George McCaskey's Bears do. And when Trestman gets made fun of, and plenty, he's been made fun of plenty here, when that was mentioned on Twitter, Kyle Long, you might remember him, he tweeted to check out the 2013 Bears offense. So I did. Kyle Long tells me to do it. I'm going to do it, mister. The Bears, 444 points, led the NFC. Mark Trestman's offense, the 2013 Bears, led the NFC. The Bears were 8-8. You're 8-8, 445 points, and that's the saddest division. They were in second place behind the Packers, who were 8-7-1. Overall, those Bears, the Mark Trestman Bears, were second to the Peyton Manning Broncos, who would then undergo a vivisection by the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. But Kyle Long was right, and then everything went wrong. And when Kyle Long was right, that big offense the Bears had back when they had an offense was good for 8-8. And they started 3-0. Okay, that was a lot of crap. We're going to talk to an author of a baseball book. We'll get back to romancing the game because while the Sox suck, it's not officially in the standings. And while the Cubs have done nothing to make Craig Counsell's job easier, really, Shota, maybe. But they're certainly not enough. And Pecota don't think that much of Shota that they're going to raise the Cubs' number. But we'll talk to an author about baseball next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Suckage. Confidently say that, Bob Costas. Robbie Triano, our producer here. Do you like Usher? Do you know who Usher is? Did you like the halftime show?
Oh, my God.
What do you mean, oh, my God?
It was, that was like my middle school, was Usher. Yeah, that was like my middle school, like, time and all of that era. So, like, all my friends that I watched it with, that's what we grew up with. So it was, we were all very involved in that half.
Yeah. So Do you think you're the what generation are you, Robbie?
I'm like on the fringe of millennial and Gen Z. So I'm like a year into millennial.
Okay. See, that's the problem right there. The Usher show was not aimed at you. It was aimed at whatever generation came before you. Huh? And don't give me this cusp stuff. We're not doing astrology here.
I'm a Sagittarius.
And it's like, I don't know, what's it called? Generation OMG? Is that what it is? Or
LOL, yeah.
Generation Upspeak? Do we talk like that? So I found the secret to, I found what I want to do with this. I don't need letters. I don't need, here's what I want. And this came from Sarah, a mate at my Trader Joe's, my bunkie. And she's the kind of Packers fan who always takes off Super Bowl Sunday. So if it's any consolation to Bears fans all these years, over the last three decades, there is a joyous hell you can envision Packer fans that they will endure while Bears fans know they'll always have Super Bowl Sunday free. You're guaranteed that. Much like the Sox and October free. That'll be the case. The Bears fans will always have Super Bowl Sunday free if you want to make plans. Anyways, one of my bunkies, she described the target, the Usher show that was the target was her generation. And her description was, we're at the age where the players look cute, but so do the coaches. That's the label. I think that's so much better than labeling generations with letters and whatever. That's a better way to do it. It's much more descriptive. We're at the age where players look cute, but so do the coaches. So much better. My bunkie Sarah is also a Packers fan who wears a sweatshirt with Matt LaFleur on it, and it says, my coach is hotter than yours.
Not wrong.
She admitted she never had such a shirt when Holmgren and McCarthy were there. Okay, also in the Super Bowl stuff, this is an amazing thing. Absolutely amazing. This is legendary stuff. Chiefs guard and former Illinois lineman Nick Allegretti, he started Super Bowl 58 in place of Joe Thuney. He played in all 79 snaps, did Nick Allegretti, despite suffering a torn UCL in his elbow in the second quarter. An MRI this week revealed the full tear. Where's the All-Madden team when you need it? Do you know what that is? Do you know what the All-Madden team is?
I'm guessing that's the choices of that Madden picked of like the gamers. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, it's the all iron team kind of thing. It's Madden team, all Madden, the toughest guys. It was like Olin Krutz. Olin Krutz was all Madden, all time all Madden guy. Nick Allegretti. We need an all Madden team.
How could you even block with a tear in your arm? I feel like your arms are so important. How could you do that?
Well, it probably kept you from holding. And by the way, I don't believe if for you conspirophiles, you NFL conspirophiles, you Taylor Swift conspirophiles, you Swifties, you Chiefties, you got the number. There were zero holding calls against the Chiefs offensive line by an offensive line that like led the league or came close in holding calls this year. And remarkably, in a Super Bowl attended by Taylor Swift, raising the consciousness of the NFL and raising the platform and the value. And you got that shot of Taylor and the boyfriend kissing on the field. So you conspirophiles. And I would say Bosa was foremost among them because he voiced it early in the week and it did no good. They were going to run that gambit on you. They were going to make sure the Chiefs didn't get called for holding, and Patrick Mahomes did it. trying to explain John Madden, and you didn't know what it was. The All Madden team was a big part of what we did when we were watching TV, and John Madden was on and watching NFL football, the All Madden team. This is like trying to explain to somebody that Paul McCartney was in a band before Wings. It just is so.
See, it's funny because when you said All Madden, the thought in my head came to the difficulty when you play the video game Madden. The hardest level when you play the video game is called All Madden. So I thought, like, oh, the players who play in the hardest mode. So that's where I'm at.
Okay.
You probably didn't understand a word of that.
No, I'm fine with it. I understand that. But All Madden to people in my generation is, these were the toughest guys in football. Nick Allegretti would have been All Madden. So Travis Kelce is going all Michael Jordan. That's, look, he's in his Taylor Swift era. You do it. You do you. On Kelce's New Heights podcast, which was released following his team's Super Bowl win over the 49ers, the athlete revealed that there is one thing that could get him to call it quits in the NFL sooner than expected. This is after he shoved and yelled at Andy Reid. Quote, I love Coach Reid. Coach Reid knows how much I love to play for him, how much I love to be a product of his coaching career. I'm not playing for anyone else but Big Red. If he calls it quits this year, I'm out of there with him, man. I've got a certain relationship with him. Andy Reid, in Travis Kelce's world, has reached Phil Jackson status. He's gone all Jordan on him. Like, right, you know what? And Big Red ain't coaching. I ain't going to be there. Whoa. And here you go. Here, this item. Former Bears head coach Mark Trestman was hired by the Chargers as a senior offensive assistant. You might remember the name of the Chargers coach, Jim Harbaugh. So I'll just throw this out there that the way he thinks, maybe Harbaugh and the Bears were not such a good thing after all. And maybe you don't want to go the Mark Trestman route. And now Trestman, Luke Getsy's in Vegas, Matt Nagy in KC. So you got three ex-Bears coaches or of some form in the same division. It's easy to laugh at, but Nagy's got his second ring as offensive coordinator. And it's more likely the Chargers will do something before George McCaskey's Bears do. And when Trestman gets made fun of, and plenty, he's been made fun of plenty here, when that was mentioned on Twitter, Kyle Long, you might remember him, he tweeted to check out the 2013 Bears offense. So I did. Kyle Long tells me to do it. I'm going to do it, mister. The Bears, 444 points, led the NFC. Mark Trestman's offense, the 2013 Bears, led the NFC. The Bears were 8-8. You're 8-8, 445 points, and that's the saddest division. They were in second place behind the Packers, who were 8-7-1. Overall, those Bears, the Mark Trestman Bears, were second to the Peyton Manning Broncos, who would then undergo a vivisection by the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. But Kyle Long was right, and then everything went wrong. And when Kyle Long was right, that big offense the Bears had back when they had an offense was good for 8-8, and they started 3-0. Okay, that was a lot of crap. We're going to talk to an author of a baseball book. We'll get back to romancing the game, because while the Sox suck, it's not officially in the standings, and while the Cubs have done nothing to make Craig Counsell's job easier, really, Shota, maybe, but they're certainly not enough. And Pecota don't think that much of Shota that they're going to raise the Cubs' number. But we'll talk to an author about baseball next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.